Okay, thanks Leo, and thanks all the organizers for giving me the possibility to come here to this workshop. Let me give a few words of motivation before I outline my talk. So the recent advances in atomic gases has opened the possibility to tune the interaction between fermions in different spin states, and so to study the crossover between condensate of tightly bound molecules across to instead a state where the fermions overlap and the condensation is reminiscent of superconductivity. So that's the BC-BCS crossover. The question I would like to ask for this talk is, what happens if you have an imbalance? So on top of tuning, on top of having the possibility of tuning the interaction between the atoms, in atomic gas it's also possible to tune the population of the fermions. So it's possible also to have imbalanced population. So what happens if to the superfluid behavior if not every fermion can pair up? If we have more fermions in the state spin up than down? I think this is a very interesting question. It's not only relevant to atomic gases, of course. For example, you can think of magnetized superconductors. A similar situation happens when you apply a magnetic field which opens, which basically changes the population of the electrons which spin up and spin down. You have a mismatch of the Fermi surfaces. However, in magnetized superconductors, this is maybe more difficult to realize because the magnetic field couples also to the orbital degrees of freedom. So you can think of more exotic cases like quantum chromodynamics also, where the different mass of quarks can cause also mismatch of the Fermi surfaces in a color superconductor. But let me also mention electron hole bilayers, where this question might be relevant. So electron hole bilayers are systems where you build two quantum wells, and either electrically or optically you can pump the system in such a way to have electron and holes in different wells. So this, in particular, the case where the system is pumped electrically is still, from the experimental point of view, at the fabrication stage. So that's a very recent experiment, and there are experiments going on in Cambridge also. But I think what is a limit of these systems, but also interesting, if you like, is that although you can pump independently or by bias or by gating the two wells with either electron or holes, it's very difficult to match the density. So you have also an imbalanced system. So let me spend just one slide about a completely different subject. And let me open a parenthesis on excitonic condensate, because this is also what I work on, apart from this recent work on Fermi gases. So this is to establish the weight, if you like, between the atomic gas physics and the solid-state physics. The idea of the BC-BCS crossover, in fact, was much earlier time than even Leggett or Eagles. And it's an idea from Keldysh and Kopayev, where you can tune, by changing the density, you can scan across this crossover, and where an exciton is a pair of electron hole excited across the band. So you can go from a very low density BC state of tightly bound exciton pairs to a BCS state, which takes the name of exciton insulator. And the search for excitonic condensate is lasted for more than 40 years. And just let me mention that has been recently observed not for pure exciton, but for a mixed quasi-particle called polariton, which is a new quasi-particle formed by the strong coupling between an exciton and a photon. And this is the work, the experimental work, and this is also my other work that I'm doing. And if you're interested, you can see Jonathan Keating's talk, which has talked about it here. Okay, so going back to atomic gases, what I'm going to tell you is very briefly, I think this audience doesn't need any word about the BC-BCS crossover phenomenology, so I'll say just a few words. Then I'll concentrate to the case of polarized Fermi gases with equal masses between the atoms, and talk mostly about the zero temperature and the finite temperature phase diagram for the homogeneous case and for the trapped case, and what the experiments observe and how these findings can be compared. So tomorrow Mira will give another talk, and in part she will explain about, so she's sitting here, the unequal masses case. And in the second part of my talk, I will talk about dynamics of phase separation and then conclude. So if there will be time, I would like also to tell you about some work which I've started doing here on Bose-Fermi mixture, which is somehow related to this. Okay, who did the work? So I collaborated with Mira, who now is in Princeton, Austin Lamacraft, and who is my office mate in Oxford, and Ben Simons, and all I'm going to tell you about is in these three publications. And I would like to immediately apologize because I'm not going to cite many of the interesting papers which have been in the same subject, and in the last 1.5 years there has been around, I counted more or less 50 papers, so I immediately apologize for missing out someone. Okay, so so the idea of flash by resonance, I think, is known to everyone in this audience. So it's possible to mix an atomic scattering level with a cross-channel molecular level, and the anti-crossing which results from this coupling is what determines the scattering length between the atoms to either be negative, so determine an attraction on this side, or a repulsion on this other side. So experimentally, it's possible to start with a gas of atoms in two different spin states, which attract each other, so this is called the BCS side, and then sweep across this line and form molecules. Okay, so through this idea is, this possibility is, has been possible to study this crossover, and again, I'll be brief because I think everyone here knows what I'm talking about. So the idea is that at temperature zero, nothing dramatic happens at the many-body level, even though at the two-body level you form and not form a molecule. And the ground state, the BCS ground state describes both the BCS limit and the BC limit of tightly bound molecules. However, at finite temperature, the situation is different. So if I plot the critical temperature versus the inverse of the scattering length, so this is negative is the BCS and this is the BC region, then I have a very different situation. On the BCS side, the transition to a superfluid state is appearing in stability. So the temperature at which Cooper pairs form and condense is the same, and one can use Seffri mean field. While on the BEC side, the dissociation temperature is not the same as the condensation temperature of molecules, and the condensate forms out of preformed molecules. So it's clear that one can, if you like, you can use an approach a la Nociation-Mick ring, where you do mean field on the BCS side and add fluctuations at one loop in the number of particles on the BC side, but there is no reason, as we will see more in detail later, for this scheme to work in the unitarity limit. So it's not, at least for the single channel model, not a well approximate scheme. Nevertheless, it gives, I would say miraculously, a continuous line, a continuous crossover. Okay, so. That's what you would expect, but there's no reason why this scheme for the single channel, we'll see more in detail later, is would give you a number which you should believe in this region. Yes.
For example, that
block,
is there a maximum there or not?
Yeah, that's
fine. So is this a solid line from a single channel calculation?
Yes, this is from, we're doing Nociation-Mick ring for single channel calculation.
Because on the BC side, it has to go.
The original Nociation-Mick ring calculation does not.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You have to. This is just to warn you about the fact that when later on I'm going to talk about this approach, even for polarized Fermi gases, you should be skeptical in this region. That's all. So for the single channel model.
Even without this approximation, I would expect a maximum, like it's right, because when I go from this right side towards left, I think the TC should go up, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's from general. Mm-hmm. And from left side, of course, it should go up because there's no other way. So in principle, there should be a maximum.
But if you look at...
That even this approximation, which is actually not the approximation, the calculation gives you this maximum. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but if you look at other approaches like the pseudo gap calculation that Kathy Levin does, she sees a dip here. So,
This is not only calculation, it's carefully not calculated. Schmidt-Rinke is 0.5 to something, it's higher.
No, this is calculated. This is done. I redid it just using the same. So this is divided by epsilon f, so it's 0.22. It's not in a trap, it's for homogeneous. Okay, so what happens for a polarized Fermi gases? So let me first tell you the answer, and then I'll tell you how we obtain these results. I think that might help the intuition. So if you go in the extreme BC limit, then you might expect that all the pairs pair up in molecules, and the remaining excess majority species of atoms in spin-up form a non-interacting Fermi gas. So you have both a Fermi mixture. And I think it helps to use an analogy with helium 3, helium 4, which is also both a Fermi mixture. Well, the phase diagram reads in the following way. So you have temperature, and then you have the fraction of helium 3 in the mixture. So if I started for very small fraction of helium 3, then the critical temperature for helium 4 decreases with the fraction of helium 3. And this is a very, simple, if you like, dependence. It just means that you are, in fact, depleting the density of the fraction of helium 4. So for m over n, you can read the fraction of helium 3 in the mixture. So if this would be an ideal gas, so an ideal Bose-Fermi mixture, this exponent would be 2/3. But if you go at lower temperature, then you meet at a critical point. So where the transition from second, in this case, become first order, and the system prefers to phase separate in two different liquid phases, a superfluid phase of helium 4 and a normal liquid of helium 3. Okay, so it happens that for helium 3, helium 4, even at zero temperature, you always have this phase separated state is always has at least 6% of helium 3. That's in this case. And also I plotted here on top of this critical point two other lines, and we will see later what they are. Okay, what we found, in fact, is very similar phase diagram. So let me plot it for a fixed interaction strength. So this is on the BCS side, slightly on the BCS side. So you have temperature. Now we have the fraction m over n. M is the difference between majority and minority species, and n is the total density of particles. So you have to read now m increases from the right to the left. So you have that the second order transition between a superfluid state and a normal state. And then at the tricritical point, this second order transition becomes first, and the system phase separates between the superfluid state and a normal state. Okay, so the phase is very similar at finite temperature. There are also other phases, like the log phase, but I'll not talk about it, and you can see the talk of Dan Sheehy at the conference where he speaks about log. So now we have to add another axis to this plot, which is changing the interaction strength. So you have to a bit use your imagination now. So you have, so if I fix a cut at the fixed interaction strength, like -1 in this case, I get this plot. So now you have a line. This yellow point is a line of tricritical points, which goes from the BCS side to the BC side, and then it reaches a point at zero temperature, which on the BC side. So how you have to read this phase diagram is that when this tricritical line exists, it means that there is a dome of phase separation below it, like this, all the way through, up to this point in which you have only a magnetized superfluid, and we will see what this phase is. And above this tricritical line, there is a surface of second order transition coming on top of it. Okay, so that's the main result, so I can tell you how we get it. And of course, at t equals 0, The phase diagram has also been derived by Dan Shivin in this article in press. Okay, so let's start with the most possible simple description, which is the single channel model. So you basically don't consider the closed channel or the threshold resonance. You only have a four-body point-like delta, like interaction between up and down. And then, because now we want two different populations of the number of particles, we introduce two different chemical potentials, mu up and mu down. Or if you like, you can introduce the average chemical potential or the difference in chemical potential. If you are in the BCS region, H is just the Zeeman term, which gives you the difference between the two Fermi surfaces. But the physical parameters are, so then we have to re-express the G, which is the interaction strength in terms of the scattering length. And this is done with this renormalization scheme, which is quite usual. So you introduce the scattering length. And then you have to calculate, instead of using the chemical potential, you have to calculate the number of particles, which can be the total and the difference. Okay, so so the first thing one can do is mean field, which is the easiest thing. You introduce the ordered parameter, which couples pairs with opposing momentum and spin. And from here, calculate the grand canonical free energy. So fixing the chemical potential, mu and h, the Zeeman term. How this is obtained is from the free energy F naught as a function of also on the ordered parameter you have to minimize with respect to delta. And then from here you can calculate the number of particles, n and m, so the total and this the difference as a partial derivatives. Okay, it turns that this system has a symmetry, so that this free energy in fact is a function not of three parameters, but in fact you can rescale, for example, the modulus of the average chemical potential out of the system, and then this means that the only parameter which at the end in terms of density it counts is the polarization, so this ratio rather than m and n separately. Okay, so then we find two cases. So this is mean field. So if the interaction strength is smaller than this equicritical value, and temperature is smaller than equicritical value, then the free energy as a function of delta looks like that. So for H equals 0 has a minimum, this is a superfluid, unmagnetized superfluid. Then you increase H and you start developing a minimum and a maximum, up to a point in which you have the two minima, the normal and the superfluid minima, have the same value, and this is when the system phase separates. And for bigger value of H, then you have a normal state. So if you want, you can reread this in terms of your delta naught, omega naught, which is the minimum of F naught with respect to delta. So if H, you start increasing H, and for this particular value I've chosen for the interaction strength, actually the energy of the superfluid state doesn't change. So it's a particular case where you have an unmagnetized superfluid. So, and this is so you are up to this curve until you reach the red curve, and now the omega naught changes slope and you cross to the normal point. So this point is the point which has the same chemical potential, but the derivatives are different, so different densities. So it's where the system phase separates. Okay, then there are other cases in which either the interaction strength is bigger than a tachycritical point or the temperature is higher, and then you have a second order transition. So when you increase H, first you move delta slowly towards zero. Okay, so basically that's all you have to know. So at t equals zero, the phase diagram, now I plotted H divided by epsilon F. So maybe it might be a bit confusing because I should put mu, but we found it more clear to plot in this way, because you can see that when you increase H, if you are on the BCS side, you need a very small H to destroy superfluidity, while if you are on the BEC side, you need a big Zeeman term, which makes sense. So so if I am before this tachycritical point, then I increase H. First, I have an unmagnetized superfluid, which is all this region. And then I have a first order transition. Here the system phase separates, and then it becomes normal. And if I start to go towards the tachycritical point, the superfluid phase can also acquire magnetization. We will see what this phase is. And on the right of this critical point, the transition becomes second order. So you only have, from superfluid, you have a normal. Okay, so you can replot this instead of towards H, towards the number of particles. And so it's exactly the same phase diagram as here. All this region, superfluid and magnetized, goes on the axis, zero axis. So this is M. And then this phase-separated region expands and so on. Okay, so this is mean field, zero temperature. So you can ask about finite T, still at mean field level. So on the BCS limit, Sarma in the 63 evaluated everything, so you don't have to do any effort. So the critical temperature versus the Zeeman term, then is a well-known result that for zero temperature you have a first order transition for H over delta naught, the BCS order parameter is square root of 2. And then at finite temperature instead, so at 0H and finite temperature, of course, this value is 0.57, and the two second and first order transition also meet at the critical point. And this line is what the second order transition would have been, but instead is first. Okay, so we saw that there is a critical point both at zero temperature and at finite temperature. So if we do mean field, then we recover this this line of critical points, which go from the BCS region to the BC, and ends up at zero temperature. Oh, Lyon balance is here. If I knew, I would have talked about quantum simulation, but I refrain myself from doing so.
So much for sticking in plan.
Okay, so now we have to add fluctuations. And we want to ask how this line of critical points changes when you add fluctuations. So what does it mean, without going to many technical details, but the idea is the same as in this paper. You add one loop corrections to mean field, so you have mean field plus these fluctuations, and because we want to look at the correction of Tc, then delta is zero. And you put this correction all into the density terms. So you have that the mean field value of density counts the number of condensed pair and the number of quasiparticles, while the fluctuation correction counts the number of thermal pairs. Okay, so we do this, and now this phase diagram, this line here, which is mean field, changes in the following way, becomes this orange line. So if you are on the BCS side, the difference between the two is very small, and they approach each other very far from the resonance. And instead, the most dramatic changes is towards the DC region, so it gets detached from this magnetization 1, and it comes down. But in fact, we found that at the resonance, we find an unphysical result where the magnetization becomes negative. And that's just a sign that the approximation scheme breaks down. Okay, so this is a problem of the single-channel model, and it doesn't happen for the two-channel model. And we got this idea from a paper from Anton Andreev in 2004, where the Nozier-Schmidt-Rieck approximation scheme works well because you have another parameter in the two-channel model, which is the width of the resonance. And this is, for narrow resonance, can be small. So you can, all the fluctuation corrections are small. And in fact, when we do the calculation, and at t equals zero, we recover the results of Dan. We found that if this is the mean field, so now you have, instead of the scattering length here, you put the detuning. Then you find that the mean field calculation is this clear yellow, and the fluctuations, corrections now of the critical point still give you something which is physical. So, okay.
What is two-channel, sorry?
Yeah, so maybe I write it here. So all I mean is that, I don't know if people see now. So now the Hamiltonian, instead of using a single channel, you can introduce the energy for the spin, for the atoms with two spins. But then you introduce also another bosonic field with a certain energy, K. on top of these two, so
C are atoms, B are molecules.
Yes, so this is this is fermionic. Okay, so this is, I don't know if you can, so B is a molecular closed channel. Now G is a coupling sign, maybe you have to put a square root of V, I don't know. And here you have the energy of the bosons in flux minus mechanical potential. So the total chemical potential. So plus the detuning nu, or delta, as I call it. So now we have this parameter. This parameter, this square with...
You also is included in the first term as well, yeah?
The?
Yeah.
Yes, sorry, yes.
In the first term as well. Let's see.
So now G square, it gives you like how strongly the two couple and represent the width of the resonance. So okay, you should put in dimension as unit. But the idea is that basically for narrow resonances, now this is a small parameter. Actually, maybe I can put...
Where is
it? So now when you calculate the fluctuation correction, the one loop fluctuation correction, then you have this parameter gamma, which appears here, which is exactly G squared in dimensionless units. And this makes all these terms small, if you like. So that's what makes the approximation scheme working.
One general question about this general model. So this theory in terms of bosons, how it's going to like it, because you can take them out and we create the same.
And you get a dispersion.
You want?
Dispersion for a couple.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like a single chain model. The difference now is you have dynamics for the boson. So for the order, so B would be the same as your order parameter delta, but now you have to add this omega and Q for the bosons. That's the...
It's a Herdeck model for superconductors, right? There are fermions and bosons.
It's the Hubbard change field that it actually has.
Wasn't it top three? I mean, if I just look at the...
Oh, right,
okay. So what is the difference?
The difference is that, I mean, if I put G to infinity, I recover the single channel model. But if G is finite and small, then you can't describe broad resonance.
The difference is you can tune the
right. So what are the conditions? I guess it alertness. So there must be some conditions for omega. I guess it in all stuff, basically epsilon is electrons and it's Fermi energy versus omega, which are the Debye frequency, and there's parameter omega d or EF, which allows you to make things simple and actually write down the quantum interaction. So do I have correct? Is it in your case omega and epsilon are the same order, or
there's no omega divide in the
so
yeah, actually can rescale, you can rescale out.
Is it the same order or different? Scale for omega and epsilon.
Same
or omega is large, epsilon small, or epsilon is large, omega small.
So, I mean, the difference is... Yes, I mean, this is depends where you are in the BC and the BCS, in the BCS limit. I think that's...
Okay, so you want to tune the ratio, basically.
Yes.
Like
yes,
and that's why it's not a single... Okay.
Yeah. You can completely deplete the fermions, convert all the bosons, and the Fermi energy is tiny compared to the Fermi energy.
Okay.
And then maybe the pi gets replaced by Fermi energy.
Okay, so basically, I mean, the punchline is that you can recover smooth behavior. And the more you make this G bigger, the more this this fluctuation scheme will break down around unitarity. Okay, so so then the last part of the phase theorem, which we didn't explain, is what a magnetized superfluid, but Vincent Liu already spoke about it quite a lot. The idea is basically what a magnetized superfluid. So if you go in the Xin BC limit, then you again you pair up all the molecules, so they are, and they form a superfluid, and the remaining excess majority species of fermions, they form a non-interacting Fermi gas. So they have to have a Fermi surface, and the rest is coupled in a superfluid, while the minority has a depletion in the same region. Okay, so this is called also one Fermi surface bridge pairing. And you can ask whether you have, also in the BCS limit, you might have two Fermi surfaces, so some bridge pairing with two Fermi surfaces. So if you are in equal masses, case contact interaction, you never found it. So you find that, for example, in this phase theorem, phase separation always becomes the dominant, so it's more stable. And what Mira will tell you tomorrow is how we found that for the single channel model with contact interaction, this phase is always unstable towards phase separation, even for unequal masses. Okay, so the next thing is that I talked about homogeneous systems. So what happens in a trap? Again, the easiest things you can do is local density approximation. So the space dependence in the densities can be attributed to the chemical potential. And because you can again introduce the sum and the difference, so the average chemical potential and the Zeeman term, H. So H, because it's the difference, will be independent on space. So it's constant across the trap, while the average decreases from the center to the outside the trap. So it's convenient to now replot the phase diagram in terms of mu and h rather than the density. So let's say at unitarity, we have the t divided by mu. Now this is, so you're still on the BCS side, so mu is positive. So t, the critical temperature versus h, divided by mu, you might read only this part of the diagram. You have a second order transition at higher temperature, and the critical point, and again, the first order transition at lower temperature. So you might expect that low temperature physics is dominated by the phase separation. So the center of the trap, let's say you can start here or wherever, up to infinity, is characterized by first order transition and higher temperature by a second. And so in the trap, you would have, like, you expect a superfluid state in the center and a normal state outside. And this boundary between the two will be sharper or less sharp depending on the order of the transition. So phase separation has been seen in experiments. I, unfortunately, couldn't be here for the conference, so I missed the fun of the talks of Hewlett and Kettler, but basically, I think maybe you were here. So you can do absorption images and measure the difference in density between majority and minority species and see that the superfluid state in the center of the core is unpolarized. So this reconstructed density profile is almost zero. And you have the normal majority, excess majority species of fermions is expelled outside the trap. Okay, this is a picture instead from Randy Hewlett, and you see something very similar with the difference that now the trap is more deformed. He sees this deformation, and I don't want to enter into this, but basically you have phase separation again between a superfluid state in the center of the trap and a normal state outside. And again, this is reconstructed 3D density profiles. So I think what I found interesting is that Randy Hewlett does temperature resolved measurement. So if you are at very low densities, where you expect the first order transition, then you have these sharp boundaries. And I plot it here, I mean, this schematic plot, because he plots like this already integrated density, so it's not as clear, but you have a sharp boundary. While if you go at higher temperatures, then he sees a polarized. So the polarization goes up in the middle, and you have something which is reminiscent, if you like, of a second order transition. So in principle, you can explore the order of a transition in this experiment.
What is
the this, he, sorry, this is a second, I mean, what it would be if the transition would be second order. You can, I mean, we'll see later that this is also one of the spinodal lines, but it's a second order transition.
Why do you call this phase separation? I mean, it's just a consequence of people came for the transition. Right? Does it have anything to do with phase separated region in the homogeneous space?
No, it's exactly, it has to do exactly with the same phase separated region, because here I'm plotting towards chemical potential. Then if it would be in density, all this region would open up in a phase separated region. So,
in homogeneous case.
Yes, it's only that in the trap you have to read it, if you like, in this way, like where you have somehow in. Okay, so the last part of the talk, I would like to tell you about some of the work I've been doing with Austin, is on dynamics of phase separation. So the question here is about, if I quench, let's say, at zero temperature, for example, from the normal side into the phase-separated region, or in temperature, what's the dynamics of phase separation? And of course, this is a very complicated question in general, but it can be dissected in at least one easy answer. So again, I'll tell you the result first and then what we do. So the phase-separated region can be divided in two parts. One, which is this darker region, which is also called metastable, where if you quench quickly in this region, you expect phase separation to nucleates, so to form by nucleation of the droplets. While if you quench fast into this other region, which is called spinodal region, phase separation proceeds by a linear instability, so by unstable modes. And this is a phenomenology which bears many analogies with many systems which phase separates, like helium 3, helium 4. So that was the other lines that are plot in the helium 3, helium 4 phase diagram, or binary mixtures, alloy binary mixtures. So if I punch into, so what I will like to tell you next is, like, first how you find these lines, and what is the early time dynamics in the spinodal region. So the unstable modes are modes which grow exponentially in time. And the most unstable one is characterized by a certain length scale or inverse of a frequency and a certain inverse of a wavelength and a certain time scale, which can be determined as we are going to see. So what I'm going to see next is how to find the spinodal region and what are the unstable modes and how do we find it, and whether we think this is, can be observed experimentally or not. Okay, so how to find the spinodal region, again, is sometimes it's homework for maybe second year students, and it's easier to think in terms of a free energy as a function of a density rather than in the grand canonical ensemble. So here you might expect that the free energy as a function of the density imbalance has this shape. This is not calculated, it's imagined. Then you have, so you should do the Maxwell construction. The points which have the same tangent are the points where you have phase separation. So they have the same chemical potential but different densities. So at these points here. And then you have the region, then you have two different regions, and this is about a question about dynamics. So if the curvature of omega is up, then you have a metastable region, and if it's instead down, is you have a spinodal region. So we want to find these points here in our phase diagram. So okay, but unfortunately we work with in the grand canonical ensemble, so we have to take the Lejeune transform of this, or if you like, the condition of having a spinodal region, so this curvature must be negative, corresponds to having a curvature positive in terms of the Zeeman term, in terms of the chemical potential. So again, we can go back to the picture which I showed you before. So you have that omega, which is evaluated at the minimum of the order parameter, as a function of the Zeeman term changes in the superfluid state almost doesn't actually, but the curvatures here is flat in this particular case, but it can be is in general it is negative along the minimum, and also along the normal minimum this is also negative. So this condition can never be satisfied. But in fact, it can be satisfied if you move along the maximum rather than along the minimum. So the spinodal points are the points in which the minimum merge with the maximum. So are these two points here, and this derivative is infinite. Okay, that's how we found these two lines, and there has been a bit of polemic in the field because in some work these lines have been mistaken for the equilibrium lines. So, but for example, with Kathy Lane, we now agree that she missed this, and everyone is happy. Okay, so basically, these lines are found by taking the second derivative. No, in fact, I wasn't referring to your work. So, here the second derivative of f with respect to delta is zero. Okay, the next point is how do we find the unstable modes? So again, I don't want to go into details, but you have to find the generalization of the matrix of this derivative, if you like, for frequency and momentum dependence, which is the matrix response function. You have to impose that this is zero. And the unstable modes are pure imaginary modes. So epsilon is a pure imaginary mode with the imaginary part, which is positive. Okay, so again, without going into details, it ends up that when you do the calculation, you have an easier condition, which is not that this one, but a sufficient condition is that, in fact, the ordered parameter propagator, the determinant has to be zero. So this is a bit analogous, if you like. You want to impose that this is zero, but in fact, what you find in reality is that the derivative with respect to the ordered parameter are zero. So that's the generalization to frequency and momentum dependence. Okay, so we do that, and we find this unstable mode. So this is for different values of the interaction strength, and you have different cases. So the easiest, the most common case, like which bears analogy with helium 3, helium 4, is when you have a mode which grows linearly, so you still have a sound mode, even if it's pure imaginary in the system, and then it decays, and this is the most unstable mode. But then you have different cases in which you still have a linear mode, but then you develop another mode inside. The two modes separate, like this, and then you go to a case where you don't have any pure imaginary mode for low frequencies. And this is due to the fact that Q, which is the phase stiffness, changes sign inside the phase-separated region. So it's negative here and positive here, and Tau was also found by the work of Pau. Okay, so that's basically all. I mean, you can plot the value of this maxima point here across the resonance, and you find that, so this is the frequency omega, and this is Q, the value of the momentum, and then you transform that in a length scale, and typically this is, you have a length scale of 0.1 microns, and a rising time for this mode, which is around 400 microseconds, which is comparable or longer than the condensate formation time, so you might be able to see these modes in experiments. Okay, so I basically finished with my talk. The conclusion is I talked to you about the phase diagram of polarized Fermi superfluid, mostly focusing on finite temperature effects, how in principle the order of a transition can be probed in experiments, and then dynamics of phase separation. So unless you want to discuss or have questions, I prefer really preliminary slides on something we start doing here with Mira on Bose Fermi mixtures, and I talk for 10 minutes about that. Okay, so the next part is not preliminary, but it's more than that. I mean, maybe it started 2 months ago, but the picture has been generated few days ago. So it's and we don't have a conclusion. So it's just to throw some idea on you and whether to see what you think. Also because this is mostly based on a work which has been done by Stephen. And that might...
Can I ask one question before you go on? About so this instability time, you get difficult numbers, but you had showed plots on the previous slide of this under different conditions.
Yes.
But applied to a trap, I guess one is always using this local density approximation.
Yes.
And there must be some characteristic equilibration time when one is using to assume local equilibrium.
I mean, equilibration time, I think, is something which is, I mean, on a shorter length scale of that. So what you have to worry about and which are really...
That region where your frequency seems to be zero.
Yes, actually, that's I mean, it's the best... If you want to see these Spinoda lines, the best thing is to go on the boundary, if you like, of these Spinoda lines, because here the time rise is very long. So what I really left under the carpet is that this is nothing to do with condensation formation. So when you do a sweep, we assume that the order parameter quenches to this final value. But this is a delicate point, how long that takes and whether it relaxes to the final point is I think, an interesting question which we didn't look at.
Yeah, another question about the phase diagram.
Yes.
So this low state, maybe there's a question. So the first question, is there any reason why the region where you have this low state is so small compared to the region?
Yes.
What is the energetics of the model?
Well, I mean, the reason, most reason is that in 3D phase separation takes over. I think Mira will explain tomorrow that in 1D this is not the case, so you can have a much bigger region. So if you go at zero temperature, that was evaluated by Dan and okay, let's see. You can show that. Yeah. So if I go in this phase diagram here, then you have a loft state which is a shiver here, and
that's not correct.
I mean, I'm not. I'm asking only about the loft state between the on the normal side. So I'm not asking how is the loft. I'm not asking about whether you have how you want to call it. I mean, so loft phase meaning only when you have, for example. I mean, the order parameter depends on the frequency and on the space exponentially. But you might have as you find, for example,
also
the inhomogeneous state. You mean cosine?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I never looked at into it. So I'm answering about the loft state in this case. So to come back, so you find that it has a small, lives in a small region here, and actually terminates at some point. So that's why we plotted at -1. You have a loft phase, but at zero, for example, you don't find it in this model.
Yeah, there's another question about this, but in principle, you might have some other kinds of phases, right? So it's not that the mean field you choose and you compare
energy, right? Yes,
exactly. Yes. Is it possible to have some other?
Actually, maybe on this, you can answer because I didn't do the calculation while you calculated.
We have only tried the Lyapunov-Chernikov phases, phase separated space. I mean, there are other proposals out there that we really have. I mean, of course, it's impossible to try everything. But I think people also try these informed thermal surfaces, and I think they cannot be these
phases. In BCS 11, they're tiny differences.
Well, it maybe implies that maybe there is another phase which is energetically fairly different.
Yeah.
Well,
you're not going to determine exactly what the structure of the...
Yeah, it's always open to imagination. When somebody imagines something that is actually better than what you had imagined before.
So you look at also at domain walls.
The domain walls is the LO phase.
But is it important in the context of trap
space? Yeah, in the trap, unfortunately, I think these states are... it's more difficult. Yeah, it's really for a homogeneous system, really, you can have a better chance of finding the Lyapunov-Chernikov phases.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going to the very preliminary part. So basically, I mean, this was motivated because we wanted to look at phase separation in both the Fermi mixture. So a similar, if you like, context. And this is the work we start doing with Charles, Matti, and Mira. So basically, the starting point is the two-channel Hamiltonian, the same one as I wrote down there. But with the difference now is that you have a bosonic species, B, a fermionic species, F, and then you want to tune the interaction with the Feshbach resonance between the two and introduce also a molecular fermionic species psi. So that's very sloppy notation, but basically it's the same model you have there with the difference that now the B is the psi and then you have fermion and bosons. Plus you have some interaction between the bosons. Okay, so yes, psi is the fermionic molecule. Yes. Okay, so then you have three, so you have two chemical potentials, the bosons and the fermions. The fermionic molecules has a sum of the two chemical potentials plus the tuning term, nu or delta, how you want to call it. So this model has been considered by Stephen and Fachev. And basically, one of the main results is that you can plot the phase diagram now as a function of the, for example, the ratio between the number of fermions and number of bosons, and towards the detuning nu, at the fixed value of the interaction strength between the boson lambda and this width of the resonance G or gamma. So what do you have? You have a second order transition here, which is this line here, between a phase where you don't have BC and a phase where you have BC. And then okay, inside the BC phase, you can still have one Fermi surface of two Fermi surfaces because you have fermionic atoms and fermionic molecules. And then inside this region, you also have an unstable region. So what this line, I would call it like a spinodal region, where you have so phase separation was not addressed in this paper, but you might imagine that lives outside this region. And the phase separation is between two different BC or a BC, and the normal state, it depends. So it's not, was not looked at. So that's why we thought that we might want to look at this problem. And, okay, so start.
They didn't
talk about phase separation. No, if I'm correct. I mean, neither what the boundary for phase separation is, which might, I imagine, is outside.
Not that you found that the system is unstable with phase separation.
Say again.
Are you saying your new result is that you find?
So my new result, which is, wait, because it's partial, but is that the system is more rich than this. So the phase diagram has so first of all, okay, maybe I start saying. So the first thing is that we asked where the first order line is here, because there must be a first order line. Which kind of transition you have? Is it between the BC and BC, or a BC and non-BC? Can the first order line ever touch this line? And where do you have tracritical points? That's what the motivation. Plus, is you want, I mean, maybe you want to address later on whether you have unstable mode. If you have two, a phase separation between two BC, maybe the unstable modes are characterized by two sound modes, so that's more rich system. Okay, so the first thing we found was just playing with numbers is that if you decrease the value of the interaction between the bosons, then you have two tracritical points appearing on the second order line. So here I didn't plot the one Fermi surface, two Fermi surfaces. So, and the unstable region, of course, has to end up there. So in this particular case, you can ever have a continuous transition between two limits, if you like. One where you have one Fermi surface and one with plus BC on this side and on the other side. Okay, so, and then we found that if you change the value of lambda even smaller, the tracritical points become unstable. So because, I mean, this has looked like a rich problem, we thought that you might want to explore it all. So you can find that in your system you can individuate three independent parameters. So So one is the, for example, you can think of 3-2 chemical potential. So nu is the detuning minus the chemical potential in units of one of the chemical potential you like. The other one is nu b in units of g square, and the other one is the interaction strength between the atoms, the bosons. And then depending on the value of lambda, you can have three different cases. So one case, if I plot in which you have a bc and no bc, and the transition is second order here in the black, and then you have two stable tracritical points, and the transition becomes first in between, and then again is second. Then you can have a case for, instead, one of the tracritical points become unstable, which is this blue one. So now the blue ones are the spinodal lines. So you have the transition is second between no BC and BC. It becomes first with the red one between no BC and BC. And then after I cross this point, I have in this particular case, you have a vacuum. But in general, I could have a case in which I have a transition between a BC and a BC, like for example here. So here I have two unstable tracritical points, and then the transition becomes here between a BC state and a BC state becomes first. So that's basically, I don't know, it's not much, but maybe you have thought about this problem or you get ideas. So I thought to throw at you some of these very preliminary results we got. And the next we are going to plot a diagram in a trap, which might be relevant for experiments and trying to give indication where you can see this transition between, first of all, the transition between BC and BC, one the second, and so on. Okay, thank you.
May I ask you, it was not absolutely clear from the picture.
Yes.
The yellow point,
yes.
The size of the phase separation region goes to zero. Simply the derivative is very, very small.
Here.
No. Further back. The main plot with this yellow point.
In the polarized.
Yes.
Yeah. So here.
No, further. Zero temperature. Yes. Zero temperature.
Zero temperature. So, So this one.
This one.
So this is also critical.
No, I'm asking the following. The size of the phase separation region at the yellow point goes to zero, or it's finite? Well, it looks like, if magnetization is almost one.
Magnetization is actually exactly one up here. So it's fully polarized.
Yes. Fully polarized, yes. I understand. The size of the phase separation region at this point, is it finite or zero?
It disappears. If I remove the...
continuously go to m equal 1, the broadening of the phase separation region, is it finite or zero?
So maybe you can look at this. This region here is all m equal 1. So the size of the phase separation region decreases and becomes...
But why it's not the same on the...
It's the same, but you have to open, So here I plot...
The diagram is really it's not your point, right? This diagram is for some other point.
So this point is, it's a point. It's a point.
No, I understand it. I'm just asking,
but this is a finite object at zero.
No, this is zero, both zero.
Both is zero?
Yeah.
It's both. Is it exactly the same or different axis?
Different
axis. Let me explain again the question. Maybe you want to ask.
Okay, maybe I'll ask it in a different way. At zero temperature on the plot where you have magnetization versus Ka-Fermi 8 versus interaction.
Yes.
Phase separation starts when you have not molecules, well, interaction is not strong enough to form a bimolecule. You have yellow point starting from doping the system with only one species, which is down. The rest is spin up. You emit one particle, which is down. Yellow point is supposedly the point where you form a molecule.
Yes.
In a single particle center, detected by the particle in the molecule. So you can introduce one molecule to the system.
Yes.
Or you can introduce a polaron spin down in the CO5.
Yes.
So there's only one point in interaction where things happen. Sometimes you have a huge broad region, as if I have two different interactions when the system is phase separating, starting from M1.
So I mean, this is exactly the case. I mean, you understand that M is one, so you have to add one molecule.
It's a very small derivative stage. If the derivative is a tank, so it vanishes, or in practical terms, you say, well, you'll see as if it's a different interaction.
So at final temperature, let's see if I understood the question. Maybe at final temperature, in fact, I mean, apart that in reality you have to add fluctuation. So as soon as you have a tiny temperature, that moves from M equal 1 immediately. So I don't know if answer your question. So at T equals 0.
It's confusing the way how it's written, that well, you don't see a small derivative. It looks like it's at minor region, but it's not.
No.
So it's a smooth continuous period.
I mean, it might be, I mean, a good question to ask whether this is of course at T equals 0 you have mid field. So whether in any way fluctuations on adding potential also on those parameter might move this point from full polarization.
Yeah, you answered the question.
Okay, so that I don't know.
So about the post-Fermi mixture, what's the difference between his approach and your guys' approach?
I mean, it's exactly, I mean, the idea is, at the end is to plot the same thing, it's just we start summing to different parameters. So he looked at the fixed value of, if I'm correct, so the fixed value of the interaction time between the bosons and the fixed value of the width. And it ends, I mean, it turns that this is a very, particular case, if you like, of the phase gradient. For example is that in this case you never have the critical points ever. So they don't just exist. And this unstable line never touches the second order transition. But as soon as you change a bit this lambda from the previous value that I have chosen, then you have these two critical points appearing. So it's just to explore various regions of this phase gradient.
So just to follow up, so are there regions of parameter space where that phase separation disappears, the unstable region disappears?
So if you plot the word density, that's we don't know.
If you go back to the other...
Yes, it disappears. I mean, it's not plotted here, but it ends up here. It's closed like this, because I evaluated. So
is there any region where...
So on this other part of the region, there is no unstable, there is no phase separation, it's one principal phase in C.
Okay. You're saying, is there a phase diagram, can I choose the parameters so there's no unstable region?
Right,
This is instability to collapse, there's an attractive interaction induced between the bosons. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful, that attractive interaction
just causes a whole thing.
And if you just have to make the repulsive interaction between the bosons very strong, and then that region...
And that's where you're working in... Your analysis is in that
region. It's a stronger lambda, strong interaction between the bosons.
Strongly repulsive.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought we'd checked it and that there wasn't any region where it went up enough to interfere with the phase diagram. Mm-hmm.
Question. That's the potential for you.